This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in the space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
How about that theme song? What about that? Telstar. Hey, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the first edition of Space Talk with Jim Behnke. Coincidentally enough, I am Jim Behnke, and this is the kickoff. This is the inaugural flight of our first Space Talk show here, coming to you from WMMB in the Showcase Studios in Melbourne, Florida, on Florida's Space Coast. Welcome, everybody. Our first guest today is going to be Frank DiBello from Space Florida, so stay tuned as we'll talk about what's going on in Florida's space program, where it's been, where it's going, as our first effort off the ground today. Throughout this program, you can join us in a number of ways as we broadcast locally and live online at WMMBAM.com. There's a number of ways you can follow us and be involved. Of course, number one, you can call us here in the studio at 768-1240 locally here. Also locally with the ATT wireless customers can dial us at star 1240 and get into the studio. Our area code is 321. Naturally enough here, again, at the launch site, 321-768-1240. We'll dial in from anywhere in the nation. You can follow us on Twitter during the program at Space Talking is the username, Space Talking at Twitter. You can send us email at spacetalking@aol.com. I've got both of those screens up here on a computer, and we'll keep an eye on that throughout the program. So a number of ways that you can get a hold of us, and those are sort of the technical details of the program. In terms of the topics and what Space Talk is going to be all about, it's anything and everything that has to do with the space program. It, of course, is just not NASA, although they seem to be the big players in town and around the nation. The space program is so much more than our space agency. We'll certainly be talking about the military space program. The 45th Space Wing is located here on Florida's Space Coast, responsible for the safety of the public on the Eastern Range and launching rockets from Cape Canaveral Air Force Station. We'll certainly be talking to folks from the wing about what military space is all about and why it's so important to everyone in the nation, everyone in the world, in fact. Other areas are going to be fair game, space education, getting kids excited about space, getting teachers trained to teach kids about space, science, math, and everything else that goes with that. We'll be talking about space science. We'll talk about what's new from Hubble. We'll talk about the new ventures that are out there, space tourism being one of them, and some of the other companies that are involved in a whole new way of doing space, competing with the folks that have been around for quite a few years. And in fact, we'll also talk about space entertainment. Oh, if this program had only begun about a month and a half ago, we would have spent at least 1 or 2 hours on Star Trek, that's for sure, as I'm a fan and have been for a long time. One of the things that we want to make sure that you understand, of course, is that I'm feeling like this is not going to be a program that is sort of like a meet the press in space. This is not necessarily going to be your hard-hitting journalist kind of a program. It's my intention that this program will be one that is informative, educational, I hope entertaining. But most of all, I want this program to be accessible to everyone who is inside this space program and outside the space program. This is not going to be an inside baseball talk where we throw around a lot of acronyms and complex technical subjects that most of us can't understand even on a good day. So that's a little bit about what the program is going to be and where we're going. Again, we want to remind you that there's all these ways that you can communicate with us, 768-1240. 321-768-1240, Twitter at Space Talking, spacetalking@aol.com. And before we get any further, I do want to take a moment at the outset of this program to thank very much Ken Holliday and Bill Mick here at WMMB for allowing this program to take place. My relationship with this station goes back probably some 15 years and have for a long time, as you locals know, provided commentary and information and answered questions and just sort of been the chief space cadet around here, certainly doing live launch commentary for missions from the Cape. And throughout all of the changes here at the station, throughout all of the changes in my own career and the different jobs that I've held, the different companies I've worked for, this station and I have stuck together. And here we are now with an opportunity to do a one-hour show about our nation's space program every week, certainly a locally broadcast show with a national flavor, I hope, and certainly a national distribution online. I should remind you that not only are we streaming live online at WMMBAM.com, but very early in the week, each week, the program, which is being recorded, will be made available as a podcast to download. Once again, initially from WMMBAM.com, and then, of course, we'll distribute that widely through a variety of online sources. So throughout these years, again, WMB and I have had this great relationship. We've talked about space program. We've been able to get little bits and in information out there every once in a while. But this is going to be your chance each week now to really get in depth into a specific topic and a particular thing that we're going to talk about again today with Frank DiBella. We'll talk about Space Florida and the state's space agency. Lastly, as we kind of introduce ourselves and talk about where this program is and where it's going, a little bit more about myself. I am a longtime space cadet, a lifelong space cadet. I'm one of those kids that grew up, in this case, in Minnesota, watching the Apollo moonwalks on one TV station, many times staying home from school or church, much to the chagrin of my school teachers or pastors, to watch these incredible events unfold on television. I can so clearly, even today, see and hear Frank McGee on NBC covering and talking about space, and David Brinkley covering the launch of Apollo 11, and seeing that Gulf Oil logo on the front of their desk. I mean, those things have stuck with me all these years. And, of course, watching that on one channel and watching Star Trek and reruns on the other, with maybe a little bit of Lost in Space thrown in there when no one was watching over my shoulder. And through the years, grew up being interested in this program, following it, reading voraciously the Life magazines that my grandma Banky suspiciously left for me in the bedroom where I slept when we visited her and grandpa so often in Fairmont, Minnesota. And all of those things, I think, contributed to this interest I had in the program. This eventually led me to a degree at Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University in Daytona Beach, involvement in the school newspaper there covering the space program as a student journalist. That in turn led, and a very interesting long story we'll tell someday, in 1988 to me joining the Florida Today newspaper as an aerospace writer. Todd Halverson and Irene Klotz and I, a woman named Ann Mittman, part of the original space team there so many years ago. And at some point, Todd and Irene and I will have to get together and tell some old war stories that will have you all rolling in laughter and unbelief about what it's like to cover the space program from behind the scenes. My career led on to space.com. Toward the end of my shot at Florida Today, Mark Dakotas over there, now with the sports program there, and I co-created Space Online and really pioneered some of the early efforts of putting the space news online. That job led to a job at space.com with Lou Dobbs. For a brief time, Lou Dobbs and Sally Ride were my bosses up in New York City while we worked here down at the Cape. I went on from there to work at the Space Foundation, jumped ship and gave up what I call frontline journalism at that point, kind of went to the other side of the counter, and from there worked in the contractor world here and now run my own program. And part of that now leads to this opportunity to bring the space news to you and information education here on WMMB. So with that as an introduction, we invite you to stay tuned. We'll have Frank DiBella on momentarily. And this is Space Talk with Jim Banky, the premier edition, the inaugural flight, the maiden voyage here on WMMB. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with Frank DiBella.
Space Talk is back in a minute. Call Jim now at 768-1240 and star 1240 for AT&T wireless customers. With everything you need to know about America's space program, here is Jim Banky.
And we're back with Space Talk, the inaugural edition, right here on WMMB. I am Jim Banky. Welcome to this first voyage of this program as we begin a weekly look at the space program from Florida Space Coast on WMMB Radio AM. Reminding that you can join us on the phone at 768-1240 locally, star 1240 on your AT&T wireless phone. 321 is the area code if you're calling from outside of town, 321-768-1240. We're online at WMMBAM.com, streaming radio. You can also see us at Space Talking at Twitter. Send us a note direct or watch us post here between the breaks. Send us email if you want at spacetalking@AOL.com. Before we get to Frank DiBello of Space Florida, we want to welcome in our very first caller. Gee, I wish I had a prize. Jim from West Melbourne wants to talk about the moon and Mars. Jim, good afternoon. Welcome to the first show.
Well, I want to congratulate you, Jim, on your new show. I wish you continued success. I've listened to you whenever I'm in the States. A couple of questions.
Sir.
What year will we send men back to the moon? And then what year have they targeted so far to send men to Mars?
Those are good questions, Jim. Thank you for that call. Let's see here. I am assuming that we'll discuss really quickly the NASA dates and the Jim Banky dates. And maybe those don't quite match up. But in any case, going back to the moon has been targeted variously between 2017 and 2020. I think the last official NASA date I saw in publication said they were going to say by 2020. And that may be a safe way of saying it. So much is going to depend on what the Norm Augustine Commission comes up with during the next few weeks. This is a commission of a panel that is looking at NASA and where it's going with its hardware and its plans. And once we get that word, we'll have a better feel for when this is all going to shake out and what it will mean for Brevard County, what it will mean for the nation's space program. But I think 2020 is a fairly reasonable guess right now. It doesn't seem to have the sense of urgency anyway that the Cold War days of the Kennedy goal of before this decade is out. But 2020, that's fair. Let's keep our fingers crossed for that. Mars is anybody's guess right now. You know, we've heard various numbers said, but it's got to be at least another 10 years. It's got to be at least 2030, if not 2040. You know, we've got some good hardware and smart people working this problem, but there are still some significant issues to be overcome technically, and space radiation is chief among them. So we can solve problems. If we can go to the moon and figure out how to get water out of the moon and split hydrogen and oxygen into rocket propellant, into breathing oxygen and whatnot, you know, then we need to learn those things before we go to Mars. And if we can use Mars for that, then we still got to solve some of these problems of technology. So that's my guess, 2020 for the moon and maybe 10, 15, even 20 years out for Mars. Maybe with the work that Frank DiBello is doing at Space Florida, we can get some commercial alternatives to the government programs, and maybe he can be sending us back to the moon and on to Mars sooner than later. Frank DiBello is the interim president of Space Florida. He comes to speak to us today to talk about what that Florida Space Agency is doing. And interestingly enough, we're doing this on a weekend in which in an extreme remote desert of New Mexico, groundbreaking has taken place this weekend for Spaceport America, the New Mexico Space Agency's effort to build a commercial spaceport in the middle of White Sands, the desert out there. It's a very exciting program in terms of the nation's efforts to get back into space with commercial space. They tout themselves as the world's first commercial spaceport. I kind of contend a little bit with that in that we here at the Cape have been launching multi-million-dollar commercial communication satellites and sending commercial experiments aboard the shuttle into the space station for many, many years. But nevertheless, what they're talking about is the new commercial space, space tourism. White Sands and Spaceport America will be the home to Virgin Galactic's efforts to send space tourists into a suborbital hop at $200,000 a pop. 300 people have signed up so far. They hope to launch as early as next year, if not within the next couple of years, as that spaceport is built. And Frank DiBello is watching that carefully, and so is Space Florida. And while we think that that may be some competition, perhaps that's just the first spaceport. There certainly are a lot more airports around here. So Frank DiBello, interim president of Space Florida, and let me tell you quickly that I've known Frank for a long time. He is a respected, nationally known figure. This is not a Florida good old boy here. This is a man who is well-respected throughout the aerospace industry, a financial expert, a businessman's businessman, and I'll say it again, respect. No one says anything bad about Frank, and certainly not to his face. But even behind his back, Frank is the man, and Space Florida has been in the news a little bit. They've gone through some issues, which led to the resignation of the first president, Steve Kohler. Frank is now the interim president as this agency goes about the process of selecting a new president, and I hope that perhaps Frank's temporary job turns into something permanent. He certainly is well qualified to do that. But in any case, he's in charge now, and he's sitting right across from me here in the WMNB Showcase Studio Live. Please welcome Frank DiBello. Frank, how are you doing today?
Fine, thank you, Jim, and I wish you a successful takeoff on your new venture, pun intended.
Thanks. So tell us about Space Florida. First of all, what is it? Why do we have it? Where is it going?
Well, I think it's important to look at it as the state's space agency, and in a historical perspective, there's probably been an identity crisis from period to period over time as to whether it was a spaceport authority or an economic development organization, but it truly is all of those. It's intended to be the state's space agency responsible for growth and development of the space industry in the state. And if we really think about the ultimate objective, it's to improve the economic well-being of all the people in the state. Mm-hmm. Because space is such an important segment of the state's economy and will become more so as time goes on.
Now Space Florida, created recently by Governor Bush's Commission on the Future of Space and Aeronautics in Florida, a panel that I actually sat on as a commissioner. And before Space Florida, there were several other organizations, three main ones that were merged together, one basically responsible for this, what you were saying, sort of a spaceport authority plus economic development, another one that kind of dealt with research and development technology and maybe education, and the third one, which you were actually in charge of, dealing with the aerospace finance and sort of the business end of things. All those things have been now combined into one organization, and do you still see that as the primary kind of structure for which Space Florida is organized and in handling all those different areas?
Well, I think there's no question that it's effective as one organization. I frankly believe that organization is not half as important as putting the right people in the right job and giving mm-hmm. them clear focus about what they're doing. Having everything under one roof and having good people in place is important. I'm very pleased in the short time that I've been there with the quality of the team that's in Space Florida, and we've been keeping focused on doing the job during the less than 4 weeks that I've been there so far.
Yeah, sure. And talking about that, and you were just on board here, and Space Florida's been around for a couple of years. Tell us about some of the things that have happened in these last couple of years that have been maybe some success stories that have been missed in the reporting and in sort of the public discussion about what you're all about.
Well, I think the big things that have been happening have been environmental. Space Florida and its predecessor organizations have come a long way in thinking about creating a business environment that is conducive to attracting companies to do business here. So piece by piece, we've been putting in place what I call a business-friendly environment. We've got a long way to go. The other thing that's been happening, and I consider them successes, is the relationship with our mission partners, NASA for the civil program and the Air Force for the military program, has evolved. And even though they may have, they're focused on their missions. Our job is not NASA's program. Our mm-hmm. job is not the Air Force program.
Right.
But our goal is to become the best mission partner that we can. And they have opened up and embraced the power of the state and, in fact, the effectiveness of the state space agency to become a good partner to help them find lower cost ways of doing things, perhaps even to partner in certain ventures to get things done that they might not be able to do as easily as we can together.
Now, with about a minute left here to discuss, the relationship between the state and the 45th Space Wing, the Air Force, I've personally seen it evolve in a very positive direction over the last year or so. this is good news for those that want to come do commercial work at the Cape?
Absolutely. I think that we've been very successful, and that is one of the successes in creating a number of tools in partnership with the 45th Space Wing to help shorten the process for going through the range clearance process. Mm-hmm. This 45th Space Wing has been a great partner. I've met several times in just the short time I've been there with General Bolton. And we have a number of partnership initiatives underway. I could not be more pleased with some of the things on the horizon with the 45th.
Well, and you've got a commercial launch site at Complex 36 that you're building and working on. You've got a number of initiatives planned for the future. Frank, we'll talk about those after this break at the bottom of the hour. We'll get into the future of Space Florida and what it's all about and where it's going and maybe when a new president might be picked. In the meantime, this is the first trip into space for Space Talk, and this is Jim Banky coming to you live from WMMB in Melbourne, Florida, just a little bit south of the Cape, live from Florida Space Coast. We'll be back after this break with Frank DiBello. More about space here from Florida Space Coast. Stay tuned.
Space Talk is back in a minute. Call Jim now at 768-1240 and star 1240 for AT&T wireless customers. Now, back to our own mission specialist, Jim Banky.
Mission specialist, you gotta love that. Well, that's George in the background playing that bumper music and helping me out on the board here and doing some of the chores that someday I'll learn to do in front of me, all these dials and switches and buttons. So if anything gets thrown wrong today, go ahead and blame me anyway, and George will just sit in the back and not say anything. So thanks, George, for being here today. And again, this is Space Talk from WMMB here on Florida's Space Coast. I'm Jim Banky, your host for this new weekly program about the space program. Coming to you live again from Florida, broadcast live nationally on the internet on WMMBAM.com. And your calls are invited here in the studio at the Florida Marketplace. Call 768-1240 locally. If you're a local AT&T wireless customer, again, the number star 1240 is a free call. Give us a call from wherever you're at in the Brevard, out in the beach, whatever. You got a space question for Frank DiBello from Space Florida or for me, feel free to call in at any time. We're available at spacetalking@AOL.com for email. We're checking it out every once in a while. A couple folks are emailing just some well wishes. We appreciate that. And we're Twittering on Twitter at Space Talking, letting folks know what's going on and how I'm doing in the break when I'm catching my breath. This has so far been a lot of fun. And Frank DiBello from Space Florida, the interim president, is helping us make it fun today. Frank, thanks for being here as our first guest on the new program.
I'm happy to be here.
Good, good. Well, we talked a little bit about where Space Florida is coming from, kind of some success stories so far. Let's look to the future now. And really, as you take the reins of this organization in an interim basis and perhaps a permanent basis, we'll keep our fingers crossed. That where are you going in the future? And I know we've got issues about commercial space. You've got a launch complex you want to try to get some folks to fly from at the Cape, Complex 36, the old Atlas Centaur pad. You've got a workforce in transition. We're retiring the shuttle. You've got maybe several thousand workers that need to find something new to do, preferably in the space program. What's it all about? What's on your plate? Talk about it.
Well, I think the idea is to keep focused on the goal, which is an increase in the robustness and health of the space industry in the state to the overall economic benefit of the people of the state, even going out to the year 2020. And we're going to put out a vision document that reaches out that far, and we hope to hang legislative requests and communicate to the people of the state what we're trying to achieve as their space agency. But if you focus on growing the industry, then the things you just mentioned, workforce, infrastructure, whether it's Pad 36 or any other pad, R&D programs, incentives, even our financing capability, they are all tools that we would use to build the industry. And so we should make investments carefully. And I failed to include education mm-hmm. in that because education is a big one. If we make investments in those four or five areas, we will be able to attract industry because we've got a quality workforce. Yes, there's a transition going on, but it is kind of a natural transition as we move from one generation of programs to a new generation of programs. And in that new generation of programs, we've got a lot of opportunities, so it's not all bleak. There's no question that there will be some impact as a result of going, as an example, Jim, from a reusable vehicle mm-hmm. to an expendable vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be a different kind of touch time on that vehicle, and everyone knows that. But the workforce that we've got has really unique and admirable characteristics associated with it. It's a very strong quality culture, a very strong safety culture. They're used to following a procedure with a discipline, keeping records, discipline associated with following processes. And the work ethic is outstanding. When you look at what companies spend worldwide to try to develop those characteristics in a workforce, this workforce would be coveted. And there's a lot of opportunity and initiatives underway, both space and non-space industries, for us to attract those companies here as a place for those workforce to move to.
Well, and the workforce issue is obviously paramount importance to the economy here, and not only in an academic sense to the economy, but to the people and the families that are our neighbors here on the Space Coast. Our neighbors are the ones that are being affected by this, people we work and play and worship with. You know, are there companies that you're talking to that are attracted to this workforce that want to come here? I know one of the problems, not only for Space Florida, but for any economic development initiative, is that you can't talk about who you're talking to. You can't talk about deals that aren't closed yet. But can you give us a sense that or some kind of confidence that you are talking to people that they are interested in coming here? They are interested in these workers, maybe some workers for United Space Alliance, turning bolts on the shuttle, might have a job turning bolts on a new launch vehicle we haven't even heard about yet?
Well, I think that there are a number of new launch vehicles that are very, very possible. Remember, what's happening is that both the military marketplace and the civil marketplace are beginning to implement what has been a longstanding policy of commercial reliance.
Mm-hmm.
So they're looking to procure services commercially from a myriad of providers, and what they're looking for are diversity of choices, so that is what's opening up the marketplace for companies like SpaceX and a number of other companies, and I can assure you we're talking to all of them. Our goal is to create the best business-friendly environment with incentives and workforce and other characteristics, as well as infrastructure investments to attract them here. And there's not a one that we're not talking to actively. I want to congratulate New Mexico on the initiative that they have going with their spaceport. And we should not look at that as competition. The more spaceports that are out there, the better, because as the sea rises, we are all going to rise with
sure.
it. And all of this together is going to foster the growth of commercial and personal spaceflight, which eventually will be good for us.
Well, and certainly with Spaceport America, I kind of look at it in the sense that let them go get the bugs out of everything, and we'll learn from their mistakes, and we'll celebrate their successes too. And at some point, aren't they going to want to, these companies that are doing this, Branson and Virgin Galactic, aren't they going to want to go somewhere than just straight up and straight back? Aren't they going to want to go from New Mexico to Florida?
They are going to want to go node to node from New Mexico or from Florida to Shannon Airport in Ireland or to Singapore, and we are in dialogue with many of those other would-be node sites already to look at collaborative efforts to eventually develop the capability for that kind of node-to-node transport.
So 50 years from now, will we have a hub and spoke system in space just like we do with the airlines? And Cape Canaveral is the hub?
I think you'll see it before then, and it's irrelevant as to whether Cape Canaveral is the hub. There isn't a company out there today that's looking at personal space flight that isn't talking to Florida because they do all want to fly here.
Mm-hmm.
We just have to make it easier for them.
Why do they want to fly here?
Well, there's a cachet, certainly, that and the history and the heritage that is here. This is a great place to host people looking for a tourism flight, whether it's an adventure or even it's a great place to conduct science payloads, science experiments in microgravity. And many of these spacecraft that we're talking about are capable of providing some precursor-type microgravity mm-hmm. work.
Sure.
So we can use investments that we've already made, like the Space Lime Sciences Lab, to attract them here. It's not just a launch pad that mm-hmm. is our asset. Our workforce, our R&D capabilities, our infrastructure across the board are all assets we have to work with.
Now, I called you in your introduction a businessman's businessman, and I truly believe that. You know business. You know how to put together a plan. There's no doubt about it. Looking at space tourism, you know, there's still a few people out there that kind of just, okay, they little chuckle, isn't that cute? They're doing a little space tourism. It'll never work. It'll never fly. It can never sustain itself as a business model. It's just a bunch of rich people, you know, enjoying themselves. You know, when does Grandpa and Grandma get to fly on a suborbital arc at a rate they can afford? Does this thing work? Is it a real thing?
Well, I think it's going to have to go through an evolution and prove itself. It's going to have to prove itself that it's safe and prove itself that it can be reliable. And but what drives business is market. Mm-hmm. So long as there's market, there'll be financing and there'll be people willing to put money into new spacecraft and new opportunities to meet market need, whether it's adventure in a space flight or whether it's a node-to-node transport for high-value assets like even organ delivery from one part of the world to the other.
Oh, yeah.
So if you can get to Singapore to from Singapore to London in a few hours, that eventually is going to have a marketplace.
Well, and I feel obligated and moved to say in terms of space tourism, it's not just going up and coming back. There's so much other. In fact, we are already, I think, the capital here in Central Florida of space tourism. Between the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex, all of the other objects and things that are around here, not only our own Air Force Base and Missile Museum, the planetarium, some science centers. We've got Disney with its Mission Space Ride has certainly got to be counted among those. And the fact that you can look out your backyard and watch a rocket launch every once in a while, those are all space tourism adventures and experiences as well. And I'm curious, I've never asked you this before or talked about it, but is Space Florida involved in any of that kind of stuff and supporting, promoting, working with?
We are, especially where there can be a connection between the adventure side of things and the entertainment side of things and education. All of those things, in addition to being enjoyable ways to spend vacation time, stimulate interest in young people to pursue science and math and engineering and the kinds of things that become the growth elements for the workforce of tomorrow. And Space Florida is going to make a serious investment in using technology to stimulate interest in our future workforce.
Tell me real quick, in about 30 seconds or less, what's the future for your job at Space Florida, the interim president? When do we find a real president, a new president, to come in and step in permanently?
Well, I'd like to believe that the board has a real president, but the board does have a process that it has to go through, and I respect that. It's an appropriate one. They'll do a national search, which is in process. I believe now they have a search firm working with them to accomplish that, and within 90 days or so, there should be an announcement out of the governor's office.
Okay, that's great. Frank DiBello, thank you for being here. Our first guest on the first show of Space Talk. I'll make up a plaque for you or something, or have the kids draw something and put it on your refrigerator, okay?
Thank you, Jim.
Okay,
great being here.
Thanks, Frank. Jim Behnke with Space Talk on WMMB. We'll be back with some updates on news, a launch forecast, and some final thoughts as we wrap up the first program here at WMMB. This is Space Talk with Jim Behnke. Stay tuned. We'll be right back in a couple of minutes.
This is Space Talk with Jim Behnke.
Good afternoon, everybody. Jim Behnke here with Space Talk from WMMB. And as we begin to wrap up our first hour, we're going to go ahead and take a quick call from Gary in Palm Bay, the second caller. You might call him the Gus Grissom of callers. And if you know your history, you know that that's true. So let's talk to Gary about how the launch works. What you asking there, Gary? Welcome.
Hey, Jim. Congratulations on your inaugural show.
Good. Thanks.
I'm enjoying it.
Good.
Yeah, I had a question about the space shuttle. When it gets into orbit, it's flying thousands of miles an hour. Has it ever had to take evasive action for space debris?
Absolutely. 17,500 miles an hour is orbital speed. That's 5 seconds a mile, or 5 miles a second. If that were to go over your head at that speed, you would not have a head left.
Wow.
And, yes, it has. The NORAD, responsible for tracker, Space Command, I should say, now I'm dating myself, is responsible for tracking objects in space, and we're capable as a species of tracking objects about softball size or greater, and those are all cataloged and understood. And so when an object that big or bigger looks like it's going to maybe be an issue, there is this imaginary box around the shuttle and around the space station as well, that if it looks like those two things are going to come too close for comfort, the shuttle can maneuver away, can slightly raise or lower its orbit, adjust its attitude to make sure that those two things don't happen, don't come together. And in fact, it's never happened in that sense. Now, there's a lot of debris up there that is smaller that you can't track, that you don't know. And I would dare say that there hasn't been a shuttle mission in recent memory that hasn't come back with some kind of debris-related hit on it. Last couple missions have had windows dinged by debris, tiles that have given evidence that they've been hit by some small piece of dust or a paint fleck from an exploded satellite or exploded rocket stage. When the shuttle went up for Atlantis, went up to service the Hubble Space Telescope, it was actually in an orbit that was more prone to space debris than the traditional space station orbit. They did take measures to reduce the risk of getting hit by space debris. It is a huge issue, and in fact, an issue that we ought to spend some time with and have somebody on from the Air Force or something to talk about it, because as we do more and more in space, this is going to become a bigger issue. You think space is this huge, open, empty volume that's just a big vacuum, and how can we even conceive of polluting space? Well, but there's only a few certain orbits that we're in that we travel all the time, and so while the rest of America may be clean, that one freeway you drive down in the middle of the country has got all that litter on the side. And so the same thing's happening in space. And so anyway, there you go. That's the answer. Yes, it has happened. It will happen. And we got people taking a close look at that. So thanks for the call, Gary. Thanks for the well wishes. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jim.
You bet. Hey, and via spacetalking@AOL.com, an email from Linda Brandt, the president of the Space Coast Economic Development Commission here on Florida Space Coast, saying congratulations and also giving kudos to Frank DiBello as the interim executive at Space Florida. And she says that she's excited to see that this show is on the air and offers us her best wishes. And Linda, as a community leader, we appreciate that and appreciate you taking time to listen and sending us that note. As we begin to hit toward the top of the hour, I wanted to update you on some things that have been going on in space and give you some commentary or advice or a warning maybe about what's about to happen. But first, let's talk about the Atlas launch the other day. The Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, the LRO spacecraft, successfully launched in space the other day. It is going to arrive into orbit on this Tuesday, at 5:43 in the morning Eastern Daylight Time. So all is going well with that mission so far. A quick four-day trip for that spacecraft to arrive in orbit. Its cousin, the LCROSS satellite on top of a Centaur upper stage, is also doing well on their big looping orbits around the Earth and eventually on a collision course to hit the moon in October. And we'll certainly talk about that. There's word out of NASA and that the leaks that have been causing problems for the space shuttle trying to get Endeavour off the ground, they may have found something, that in a misalignment in the way that a hydrogen piece of hardware that deals with gaseous hydrogen is kind of riveted onto a plate that connects to the external tank of the shuttle, may be a little misaligned, a little bit off in terms of its exact alignment in a circle. Maybe a different type of seal that they could use to make that a tighter seal. It might be the answer to that problem. It looks like NASA is going to plan to do some kind of what's called a tanking test, where they're going to go ahead and fill Endeavour's tank, external tank, with its hydrogen fuel to measure leak rates and see if not they haven't really solved that problem. If all that goes well, that tanking test is successful, then they're looking to go ahead and launch as early as July 11th. So we'll keep our fingers crossed on that. We also want to just kind of send a quick shout-out to the fact that our good friend Craig Kovalt, a seasoned aerospace writer, good friend, longtime writer and reporter for us, Aviation Week and Space Technology, now working with our friends at Spaceflight Now, just this past couple days here, has been awarded the 2009 Aerospace Journalist of the Year Award for Space, presented in Paris at the Paris Air Show, the 100th Paris Air Show underway this week. He wrote a story called Secret Inspection Satellites Boost Space Intelligence, and it was published by Spaceflight Now on January 14th. And he talks about a classified program that involves that a small military spacecraft, experimental spacecraft, was capable of actually going up to geosynchronous orbit and kind of sneaking up on another satellite already up there and actually inspecting it, taking pictures of it, spying on it, if you will, and backing away without even that satellite or anyone else knowing that it was up there. And it's got some really neat technology in it that could be very useful, not only in military applications, but certainly other applications as well. So for that story, Craig wins one of the biggest awards in space writing, and Craig is a good friend, and I wanted to make sure that that the world knew that and saw that that he had made that award, won that award. A little bigger story on that is on spaceflightnow.com on the web in case you're interested. A quick look at the launch forecast. I want to every week tell you a little bit about what's flying, not only from here, but from around the world as appropriate. And just kind of coming up here in a little while is a launch June 21st from Russia. The next launch from the Cape looks like it's still going to happen on June 26th. So we're standing by for that, a Delta IV carrying a weather satellite. Endeavour still online for July 11th. Really quickly to wrap up here, Impact, a new TV miniseries starting tomorrow night on Sunday on ABC. Watch it if you must. Turn off your brain. Don't try to figure it out. Just enjoy it or don't. But I'm warning you right now, two-part episode tomorrow and again next week on Sunday. Meteors hit the moon and send the moon crashing toward the Earth. And oh my gosh, we only have 39 days to live. What would you do? What would you do? One reviewer says it all ends happily, making Impact look like the Disney Channel Seems Dark. Enjoy it if you can. I warned you. We'll talk about it maybe next week. So in that regard, we wrap up the first Space Talk. Jim Banky here from WMNB. Thanks for listening. We'll see you.